Hello, my name is Brian. I'm an alcoholic. I want to say thank Amanda for having me speak in tonight. That's pretty awesome. Sings a lot. And the gentleman before me, James, I think it was. It's awesome. Thank you for sharing. So my sobriety date is December 3rd, 2007. I have a sponsor. He's got a sponsor. I sponsor others. I worked all 12 steps. And I work with new guys today. It keeps me sober. Like James said, my home group is the Yana Men's Friday Night Keep It Simple group. Best home group in the world. Sorry, guys. I just want to say that this program is awesome and amazing. And if you get sober, you can have an awesome life. And if you're new, welcome. You're the most important person here at this meeting. And I want to thank my sponsor that took me through the 12 steps. I'm very grateful for him. His name's Mike. I don't think you'd mind me saying his name. And my current sponsor, Mickey, for leading by example. He's a good guy. I grew up in Land O'Lakes, Pasco County, a little north of here. Normal middle-class family, I guess you can say. Mom, dad, brother, older brother. His name's Nathan. He's 2.5 years older than me. Played on the soccer team when I was a little kid. I wasn't a big fan of that. Normal kid stuff growing up. I kind of jumped to the first time I had a drink. It's just when life started happening for me. I was 12. I was in sixth grade. And also, before I get to that, growing up, I always wanted to be like Big Brother. Whatever he was doing, I wanted to be like him. If he was skateboarding, I had to follow him around and hang out with his buddies, and I had to skate or I had to skateboard and try to tag along with him. And that kind of led into school. I guess it kind of started in sixth grade. I wanted to like hang out with the older kids. So I guess it started like in sixth grade. I wanted to hang out with the seventh graders. It made me feel cool. I don't know if I'm the only one that felt like that, but I felt cool if I was hanging out with like the kids ahead of me, like one or two classes ahead of me. So I was in sixth grade, and I was friends with a couple buddies that were in seventh grade. They were probably like 13. I was 12. And we were gonna go drink. We were gonna find out what it was all about. It was my first time drinking. I don't know if it was their first time drinking, but it was one of the guys' birthdays, and we were having a birthday party. And then, like after the birthday party, like a couple of the guys stayed afterwards. And it was like me and four other guys, and he had some property, so we like went out into the middle of his property, and we camped out. And I think we stole a 12-pack of beer from his mom. So it was like a 12-pack between the five of us. And I had two beers. And like I said, my goal was to get drunk. And so I chugged the two beers. And then I was drunk. And then I blacked out. I then ate some birthday cake. And then I threw up. And then I passed out after that. And then I woke up in the morning, and I was like, yeah, I was like, that's what it's all about, you know, I was like, it was cool, and that's what I wanted to do. I got drunk my first time, I blacked out my first time, and that's kind of how my drinking career went after that. And like, I drank because, plain and simple, because I like the produce effect by alcohol. You know, it made me feel good. I wanted to feel good. I did other things. I did drugs are part of my story. I'll keep it to a minimum because this is Alcoholics Anonymous and that's the way they like it. But it is a part of my story. And you know, so I kind of like went with that, and I thought like I associated like having fun with getting drunk and partying at a very young age, and I kind of just ran with that my whole life. And And I kind of carried it into high school, like, you know, like a work hard, play hard attitude. Like, I was a good kid, I made good grades, and then I'd, like, drink and party and have fun on the weekends to, like, reward myself or something. I don't know. So it was the first time I ever had a drink, 12, and then 7th grade, I woke up to go to school one day, and my brother was skipping school with some friends. He was supposed to be in 9th grade, and my parents were at work, and they were smoking some marijuana, and I was like, hey, what are you guys doing? And they thought it'd be cool to, you know, get me high and send me off to school, and Big Brother was doing it, so I wanted to do it, so that's what I did. It was cool, I guess, and I thought I was cool, and so 12, 13, I was introduced to drugs and alcohol at a young age. I didn't really get into it a lot. After that, maybe I did it a handful of times at the very most between then, like 13, and then when I went into high school, my freshman year in high school. I was really excited about going into high school. I was like, stories, your memories are made in high school, you meet your best friends, you have the time of your life, you hang out with upperclassmen, and like, I don't know, that was my perception going into high school, and I thought I was a big kid, I thought I was cool, I was excited, I was pumped up, and so I went into high school, I went to Land O'Lakes High School, Pasco County, and I thought I was a pretty good kid, I guess you could say. Others might have thought different, but so going into high school, I was on the high school wrestling team for all 4 years, the varsity wrestling team. I was captain of the high school wrestling team 2 of those years. I went to states my senior year. It was a great sport. I loved it. I believe it kind of kept me out of trouble a few months out of the year. It helped me. It prevented me from hitting my bottom sooner than I did, I guess you can kind of say. And I wanted to be good at it, so I would kind of like not do what I did as much during wrestling season, but I still kind of, I wasn't able to not do it. I made good grades. I was a A, B student going through high school. Friends with most people, I guess, kind of, you know, social butterfly, went around with everybody. But so my freshman year, I went into high school. I was ready to have a good time. I had a great time. I met all the seniors, went to the coolest parties, had a blast. You know, I went to school. When I went to school, you found out where the party was on the weekend. You drank on the weekend. That's what I did. Things might have changed, but that's what I did. And so my freshman year, I had a great time. I had a blast. I went to the coolest parties. Did fun stuff, and I didn't have any consequences until that summer. I got a consequence. I got arrested for underage drinking. Don't really have time to go into that story, but that happened. And then I went into my 10th grade year in high school, and I started getting into prescription pills and drinking a lot. That was kind of my mix. And it was Halloween. And I went to... After my freshman year, I started getting consequences for my drinking after my freshman year in high school. So I went to a party. It was Halloween, my 10th grade year in high school. And I was at this party, and I was drinking, of course, like always. And it was like time to go home. People were going home. And I was standing in the kitchen drunk, like, yeah, let's get drunk, let's party. You know, and people were like, go home. You know, like, they're like, we don't want you here, the party's over. And I was that guy, and it was one of those nights, and one of many. And this night sticks out because there's a kind of a story to it. So I went home, and I was like, I don't know, I was like 16 maybe, I don't know, I was in high school, and I came home, and it wasn't like the first time I came home under the influence. My parents did not approve of me drinking and doing drugs at all, but I came home a few times under the influence, you know, I got grounded, whatever, whatnot. And my brother was kind of like, you know, I guess he was the scapegoat or whatever, like everybody, like he was into drugs and drink drugs a lot, and it was kind of like he dropped out of high school and he did drugs, and like I was kind of like the better kid that was like still in school, so I could get away with stuff kind of. And so I came home that night and I was drunk, and I walk in the house and I have a beer in my left pocket, a beer in my right pocket, one in my left hand, I'm drinking one, and it's like, I come home, so one of my friends dropped me off, I guess, it's like 1 a.m, I come home, and my mom answers the door, and she was just like sick of me, so she was just kind of like, Brian, give me the beer, go to your room, we'll talk about this in the morning, and I still wanted to party. The party was going to continue, and I was in a blackout. It happened quite often. And, you know, in the next part, I tell you it's nothing I'm proud of. It's just kind of what happened. my dad woke up and he came out and we proceeded to get into a fight. It wasn't anything pretty. Like I said, it's nothing I'm proud of that I got in a fight with my father. And in the midst of the blackout, I pulled the phone out of the wall because I guess they were calling the cops, and I ran outside and like hid or something, and like five cop cars come up to my house at like 1 a.m. and my neighbors are probably like freaking out like who died or something, and this was like the first of cops at the house at 1 a.m. between me and my brother. And so long story short, I woke up in jail the next morning. I was in like the real jail because they didn't have a juvenile center in Pasco County, Land O'Lakes, where I grew up. So I woke up and I look over and there's this lady. I'm in this little jail cell by myself, and there's this lady, and I say to her, I was like, why am I here? And she said something like, you're an idiot. And that's really what happened. And I said, no, really, I know that much, but why am I here? You know, because I didn't remember. I was in a blackout. And so they told me what had happened, that I got into a fight with my dad and blah, 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 and I got arrested and stuff. So, and that kind of scared me. That was the first time that I realized that something's not right. You know, that I got into a fight with my dad, I was in a blackout, I could have killed him and not remembered it, you know what I mean? That scared me. And I kind of like told myself like, well, I'm young, if I wasn't doing those other things and I was just like drinking, like that would have never happened. And I kind of just like blew it off really quick, in one ear, out the other. So I kind of straightened up my junior year in high school, made straight A's, I kind of did nothing but drinking that year. You know, high school moves forward. I'm in my senior year in high school. I get introduced to other party favors. I like them. They allow me to not black out and drink more. So I kind of do those. And my graduation comes along May 2007. I got my years mixed up. 2007, I graduated from Land O'Lakes High School. And I had a 3.4 GPA, like pretty good grades. I had like a job at Publix. I had just gotten a cool 2004 Mustang, and I was cool because I had that car. I was the cool guy, and at least I thought I was. And everything was kind of good, you know. Every job at Publix, the guy graduating from high school, yeah, he's good to go, you know. And so when I graduated, it was like party time. It was like all my friends were like going to college and they're like focused, and I was like, dude, it's time to party, time to celebrate. I accomplished something. And when I graduated, my life went downhill really, really fast. Over the next 6 months, just my life got turned upside down, and I became a full-blown junkie. It's not how I planned it, but that's kind of what happened. So I graduated from high school, and like within a few weeks or a month or something, I don't know, like my focus became partying. I wasn't focused on school. Like I wasn't showing up to college. I was going to the community college, and like when I did, I would sleep all day through class because I stayed up all night and I didn't want to know what day it was, and I was confused and in a blackout half the time. And so like I withdrew from college. I was like, you know, I'll go next semester in the fall when I'm focused. And then I lost my job at Publix. Well, actually, I kind of quit because I fell asleep in the bathroom at work, and I worked on cash register. So they're like, where's this guy at? And I woke up to my managers like banging on the bathroom door. And I came out and I was like, oh, what? I'm fine. And they're like, you've been in the bathroom for 45 minutes. Are you okay? And I was like, oh, I just fell asleep. And they're like, you don't just fall asleep in the bathroom. So, you know, they gave me a drug test and they wanted to help me and keep, you know, let me keep my job and stuff. But I was like, nah, I don't really need this job. Because it would stop me. It would get in the way from me doing what I wanted to do. So I was like, yeah, I don't really need this job. So I lost the job, lost the cool car, withdrew from school. And then it was just cruising around town doing what I had to do every single day to get what I needed. And you guys, we all know how that goes. Graduated, gave away a bunch of stuff. And then my brother also, he's got his thing going on with drugs at the same time as me. And he had a girlfriend, her name was Hope. They were together for 4 years. That summer, she drowned in a lake by her house, and that really messed my brother up. He went off the deep end, and so when Hope passed away, me and my brother kind of started hanging out a lot. You know, we both had that work hard, play hard attitude, and we weren't working, so it wasn't a good combination. So we got into a bunch of stupid stuff, and then my friend, also that summer, my friend Pat, he had gotten into a DUI car crash. He was leaving a party, and he was under the influence, and for some reason, his younger brother was in the car with him, and Pat flipped his car. Pat died, and his little brother lived, and big deal in my neighborhood, good friend of mine, everybody knew about Pat. And so when that happened, they had like a big get together, and like, you know, they rented out the Brass Mug off of Fletcher. I don't know if it's still there, but they rented it out for the night, and they called it Pat Fest, and a bunch of people came and to remembrance of Pat. And I had just turned 18, my brother had just turned 21. So we went, we were drinking and using prescription drugs on the way there. We were always drinking by this point. And we got to there, and we were listening to the bands, having a good time, listening to the music. My brother was buying pitchers of beer and bringing them back to the table. Me and my friend Brittany and my brother went there together, and we met other friends there. We were drinking. Long story short, I look around. I couldn't find my brother and Brittany. They had left. And I called them, and I was like, hey, where you guys at? And we're at so-and-so's house. So I went and met up with them. Wasn't my first time drinking and driving. I drank and drove all the time. I was good at it. And I went and met up with them, hopped around a few places, ended up in my parents' house. And at this point, like, me and my brother were like wild child, you know, like my parents couldn't like control us, and we were like lost hope, and they were just like going to bed and like doing normal life stuff, and like we would pop in the house at crazy times, and it was one of those nights. And the last thing I remember was standing in my brother's room. I'm looking at my brother and Brittany. They're sitting on the bed, and we were going to go to this other chick's house to party more. And that's the last thing I remember. It was between about 11 o'clock and 12 o'clock at night on November 18th, 2007. I don't remember like walking out of the house. I don't remember getting in my car. I don't remember putting on my seatbelt, backing out of the driveway, driving down the road. And I was driving, and this was in Pasco County a few years back, so it was a little, one of the back roads. And I was driving down the road. My brother's in the front seat, and Brittany was in the back seat. I was in a blackout, and I swerved off the road. And as soon as I swerved off the road, my SUV hit the grass. It rolled like 3 times, and it landed upside down on top of a barbed wire fence facing the direction we were coming from. And when the car came to a stop, I crawled out of the car, and then I heard Brittany, so I pulled Brittany out of the car. She broke her leg in the crash. And I didn't see my brother, and I yelled out for him, and he was about 30 feet away on the other side of the fence, up under by a tree. And I ran over to him, and I got down by his side, and I said, Nathan, are you okay? And he said, get off my chest, I can't breathe. And I told him, I said, Nathan, I'm not on your chest. And he said, get off my chest, I can't breathe. And when he repeated himself, I knew something was wrong. And I ran out to the street, I waved down this truck, I said, call 911, there's been an accident. And we went to the hospital, ambulance took me and Brittany, and ambulance took my brother. We got there, and so I'm in this emergency room. I'm completely wasted. I don't know if my brother's dead or alive. I've just gotten into a DUI car crash. And, like, this is how sick I am. Like, this is where I'm at. And it's like, I have to remember this, and I have to share this with you guys so I remember this. You know, I'm sitting in this emergency room, and I have a bunch of cuts on my leg, a bunch of scars, and this nurse is, like, sewing up my leg, and I'm yelling at her, like, in her face. I'm like, give me pain pills. I need pain pills. You know, just trying to milk this lady for all I could get, you know, let alone all this stuff's going on right now, and I don't care. You know, it's like all I could think about was getting more, getting more, getting more. And that's how sick I was. And, you know, about 30 minutes goes by, and my mom and dad walk into the room, and they didn't even have to say anything. I saw the look on their face. I broke down. I started screaming and yelling. I said, kill me now. My life's over with. I've killed my brother. And, that morning, a state trooper came. He drew my blood. I had a blood alcohol level of 0.099. I don't know why I didn't go to jail that night. I went home with my parents the next morning and stayed in my room and did whatever I could do to change the way I felt for about the next 2 weeks. And I remember my mom came in and she was like, you know, we need to go see an attorney. And I was like, all right, it's probably a good idea. And I do want to add this in here. You know, I remember, I don't usually tell this part of my story, but I'm going to tell it tonight. But I remember I was sitting in my room within one of those days in that 2 week period. And my mom's friend gave me a journal, and I guess they thought it would help me. They were like all scared I was going to kill myself, you know, so they were all like, keep an eye on me. And my mom's friend gave me a journal, and I wrote in it a few times. And I remember one night I was sitting in my room by myself, and I just started crying. And I just started talking, saying, please help me, just please help me, please help me. And I think that was like kind of like my first like cry for help, like asking God for help. And I didn't even realize it at the time, you know what I mean? But I feel like that was kind of like my first cry for help, like really asking God for help. And I didn't even know I was asking God for help consciously. We go see an attorney. I'm sitting in this room with this attorney, and you know, he says you need to go to rehab because it's going to help you stay out of prison. And I was like, okay, I don't want to go to prison, so I'll go to rehab. And I went to rehab, and I thought, you know, I would go into rehab and I would get my drug use under control, because I wasn't an alcoholic when I first got here, I'll tell you that, you know. But that was just a joke. But so that was my thought process. I would go into rehab, you know, I'd fix things, I'd, you know, try to stay out of prison. And then I went to this rehab center, and you know, when I was in there, they took me on these white vans to these meetings called Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's how I stay sober today. You know, we're here at one right now. And I remember when I was in rehab, my experience is I had to be like, I was very grateful that I had the opportunity to go to rehab. I feel like I needed to be like removed from my situation and then like told like, there's a fatal nature of your situation. I had to be told that, you know, that's what it tells us in the book, you know, 12 and 12. And, you know, so I did the whole rehab thing, and you know, I wasn't sure if I was going to stay sober or whatnot, and I had like no friends, and I owed people money, and people wanted to kill me, and I didn't want to go to prison. So like, it was kind of like, I guess I was just going to like try this out for a little bit, you know. In rehab, they kind of told me like, fake it till I make it. So that's what I did. I got a sponsor. I started getting into the steps as soon as possible. And, you know, so I just kind of, my first 6 months of sobriety, I just kind of pretend, and I wasn't sure if I wanted to stay sober. And I just kind of went with it because I really had no other option. There wasn't anything else looking any better. So I just did that. I got out of rehab, and I went and lived in a halfway house for 10 months. It was a great move for me. I think I kind of needed it to change my situation. And I did the whole halfway house thing, and I got a sponsor, started working steps. I got a job. I was staying sober. You know, fast forward a little bit, and I was about 8 months sober, had a warrant out for my arrest. You know, okay, Brian, you're being charged of DUI manslaughter, DUI serious bodily injury. So I go turn myself in. I get out shortly after. I get back to what I'm doing, staying sober, halfway house, going to meetings, working steps with my sponsor. And fast forward again a little bit, my dad had a heart attack on Valentine's Day 2009. I was at work. I got the call, went to the emergency room, and I walked into this room, and my whole family was in there. I was the last one to get there, and my mom like turned around and looked at me, and she had that same look on her face the night that they told me my brother didn't make it. And I was about 13 months sober, and I broke down, started screaming and crying then like a little kid. And my sponsor was there with me, and we stayed sober through it together. He was there for me, by my side. We went outside, we prayed, we talked about it. He was by my side, and he helped me stay sober that night. And I feel like if I could stay sober through something like that, I could stay sober through anything. And it was a big turning point in my sobriety. So, you know, moving forward a little bit, I was about 17 months sober. My final court case, I'm going to court, and there are actually people in this room that were in that courtroom that day that I got sentenced, you know, and that just shows how AA works in your life. Like, you know, I go to court. It was April 15, 2009, and it was the last court case of the day. And I'm sitting there, and the, you know, judge says, all right, state attorney, what do you guys recommend, blah, 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 you know, 14 and a half years prison. He says, you know, Mr. Rushing, do you want to say anything before I sentence you? And I told him, I said, yes, Your Honor, I'm not that guy that I was. I've changed, and I don't ever want to be that guy again. And after that, the whole courtroom stood up, lined up in the middle of the courtroom. Everybody from AA, my employer, about 50 guys from AA showed up that day, took off of work, came there, supported me, and just stood up and just told this judge how I've changed and how I'm inspiration and how I've turned my life around. And like that just blows my mind because it's like that, like I said, it's AA working in my life. That's how AA works. We show up for each other. We stick to it. It's a we program. We do it together. And it's like, it's, I'm just so grateful for that, that these people just showed up and were there. And like, that's how we do it around here. And, so he sentenced me to 10 years probation. And then his exact words, I'll never forget. He said, I can't not send you to jail. I have to send you to jail. And he sent me to 9 months in county jail. I'm extremely blessed for the sentence I received, you know, and you just won't ever hear about that happening. You know, you don't hear about someone DUI manslaughter going to jail for 9 months. So I went to jail sober. I came out sober. I had my I read 86 and 87 every single morning in jail. I worked 16-hour days. It went by really quick. It's no fun. Some of us probably know what it's like. And I got out, read my daily reflections every morning while I was in there. I got out, I got back to what I was doing, and the day I got out, there was a barbecue at my mom's house with a bunch of people in AA, you know, and just showing. And my friends came and visited me when I was in jail, and that meant the world to me. And, you know, like, they didn't forget about me because I disappeared. You know, they didn't forget about me. They remembered me. When I got out, we had a cookout, AA friends, barbecue, and it was great. So today, I'm sorry, I could talk for forever. You know, I got to get into some solution real quick. I apologize. But so today, you know, a lot's happened since all that. It's been a few years. I hang out in AA. I stay sober. I work steps. I help people. The 12 steps, I can, you know, people talk about them, you know, 1, 2, 3, this, blah, 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 you know what I mean? But it's like, for me, I feel like, you know, it's an experience you have to experience for yourself, plain and simple, you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, I could talk about the 12 steps and how great they are, and that's my experience. I've worked the 12 steps with a sponsor, and it's absolutely changed my life. It doesn't really make sense. I don't understand it, you know. But my experience is that I was placed in a position. I was desperate enough, and I had a little bit of willingness to listen to somebody else. And he said, hey, we're going to work these 12 steps, and your life's going to get great. And I said, okay. And I just had to listen to somebody else, and he took me through the 12 steps. So on the 12 steps, it's something you must experience for yourself. Don't do it alone. Get a sponsor. They'll take you through the steps. It's a great thing. And for me, you know, if you're new, get a sponsor, work the steps. Get into the steps as soon as possible, because in the steps is where you're going to get peace and serenity. Through working the 12 steps, you get peace and serenity. The obsession is removed. I don't think about alcohol. I don't not think about it. I'm placed in a position of neutrality. Life is great today. And, you know, like I said earlier, if you're new, you're the most important person here. You know, I suggest you get a sponsor. You get into the steps. You go to a meeting every day. Go to 90 meetings, 90 days. Read some literature. Call somebody in the program and your sponsor every day. Hit your knees in the morning and at night and just start out real simple and say, hey, help me, please. Thank you at night. I guarantee you, you're going to get nothing but good from this program. That's just how it works. You don't come here and you do the deal and your life gets crappier. It gets better. That's my experience. And, You know, you can't come to a 12-step program and not expect to work all 12 steps. Plain and simple. So if you're here, you're at a 12-step program, you should expect to work all 12 steps. That's how we do it around here. You will find great friends in this program. Like, I cannot stress that enough. You will have friends for the rest of your... You will meet people, the best people in the world. The greatest friends, the best friends you've ever had. Lifetime friends. You will meet them here in this room. Great people. I encourage you to seek a connection with a higher power of your understanding. I choose to call him God or Gus, the guy upstairs. Whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean? I gotta keep God and AA first. God and AA first, then everything else. I learned that from a wise man. That's how I gotta do it around here. Keep God and AA first, and then everything else after that. I gotta live recovery. If you're new, you gotta eat, sleep, and breathe recovery. Wake up, go to a meeting. You know, go to work 6 to 8 hours a day. Get out of work. Go to another meeting. You know, go hang out with people after the meeting. Make some phone calls. Talk recovery. I got to eat, sleep, and breathe recovery when I'm new. My job my first year is to work the 12 steps and stay sober. I have this little thing that I like to read. A little bit about spirituality. Spiritual choices must be made with the whole person and not just the intellect. Faith involves risk. It involves taking a leap, hence the term leap of faith. I have to commit myself without objective evidence. So if I'm new, I got to come here, I got to take that leap of faith, I got to try it out without objective evidence, without knowing what I'm going to get. I got to take that leap of faith and try it. You got to do the steps. You got to do the steps or die. You can have fun in sobriety. I got sober at age 18. I'm 25 now. I thought that only old people get sober. You know, I thought my life was over with. I thought it was the end of the world. Blah, 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 blah. You can have fun in recovery. And again, I stress, you know, the steps remove the obsession. You get to see other people grow in this program. AA's taught me to stay here, grow up. You know, I've grown up literally in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have hopefully a bright future ahead of me today. I met my fiance in Alcoholics Anonymous. We're getting married next year. That's great. It's like things I never would have dreamed of. I am in school. I got into the College of Nursing at USF. And that's just amazing. I never thought I would be where I'm at today. And, you know, I know I got a lot of, you know, we all have a lot of hoops to jump through and things to go through in the future, and I know I do as well. But, you know, and it's all because of the program Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous. Because without the program, I wouldn't have nothing in this, nothing, none of this. None of this would be in my life today without the program. I just want to read one thing before I close. Like I said, I could sit up here and talk all night. I could keep going and going, but I have to stop. Last thing. You may have read it before. My experience is I heard this when this meeting used to be in the church across the street in the basement. This was read, and I didn't understand it. And then, you know, and I read it today, and I understand it, and it absolutely means everything to me. It says, so hopefully if you're new and you might hear it tonight and you might not understand it, and then you might stick around for a while and then you might understand it and you'd be like, ah, I know what that guy's talking about. So it says, life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And it's like that is just, that sums it all up. And that's my experience with the program. That it just means a lot to me, that little paragraph right there. So if you did not get anything out of me speaking tonight, get this. If you're new, get a sponsor, work some steps, and stick around, keep coming back. Thank you very much for having me speak.